Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 179. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again, straight out of the maskless Houston, is John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm still out in my house, Pete, but, you know, I've been thinking about this podcast, and I think it's time we sell out. We sell out hard. So I'd like to announce that I've got a hunger for the 23 flavors of delicious Dr. Pepper.
Oh, nice.
Produced here in Texas. And the reason why we need that sponsorship is I need 40 cases of this stuff because it's crunch time.
You working hard, John?
Yeah, yeah. This podcast is being pre-recorded, everyone, but we're getting this release over the line. It's going to be good.
Oh yeah, it's release time, isn't it, man? VSEN, the cadence has been pretty. We were just talking about this in the pre-show, Pete Keeler and I, but the cadence is pretty rapid, man. It doesn't slow down. And this release of VSEN 7 update 2 is certainly no slouch. And I said his name already, so I might as well bring him to the conversation. Joining us again on the podcast is Mr. Pete Keeler. Pete, welcome back.
Hey, thank you very much, Pete. Happy to be here on this very special 179th. Episode of Virtually Speaking Podcast. So, you know, it's of course a special occasion on that very special number. So,
Oh yeah.
That's a prime, isn't it? We'll let someone on Twitter call us out or not, whether I'm right.
Well, it's only special because Pete's on here, let alone the fact that it's a great launch. But Pete, we've done this before, and we're going to do it again. For those following along at home, we've got it's launch day, so there's plenty of stuff to go online and read about vSAN 7 Update 2. We're going to point you to that stuff on the show notes of this page, but John and I are going to pick Pete's brain a little bit on some of the features that stood out to us. Sound good?
That sounds good.
Cool. John, let's start with HCI Mesh. Now, I know that came out previously, but there have been some updates in vSAN 7 Update 2. So why don't we start there?
Yeah. So HCI Mesh, kind of the first release of that came with Update 1. This allowed a vSAN cluster to basically be able to mount the data store of another vSAN cluster. So if you had two vSAN clusters that were friends hanging out under the same vCenter, and one of them had some extra compute, one had some extra storage, you know, you could basically mount the data stores across, and then you could use those otherwise stranded resources of compute and storage. And you could kind of have several clusters that could talk to each other. This isn't like a weird swizzling or wide striping or storage virtualization. You're not putting vSAN on vSAN. This is just able to mount that data store. Pete, can you explain what's new or what's different here?
Yeah, I think one of the things that all of us are so excited about with vSAN 7 Update 2 is for HCI Mesh, the introduction of being able to support a vSphere cluster, that vSphere cluster mounting a backing vSAN cluster so that that vSAN cluster can provide the storage resources to that vSphere cluster. It's going to be so interesting to see how our customers are going to be able to use this really important and very significant improvement within HCI Mesh.
So getting, I guess, into the details, this enables a compute cluster, if you will, that basically isn't running vSAN locally. I guess probably the most obvious question people are going to ask is, do I need to license that remote cluster for vSAN?
No, and this is, I think, probably one of the most interesting aspects about this that will introduce so many new interesting architectures is that the hosts that comprise the vSphere clusters, they do not need to have any additional license beyond what they have. They can just be those vSphere hosts living in a cluster. They will consume that storage in that source vSAN cluster, but you don't need to purchase any additional licenses. So I think it's a really compelling model for us to be able to provide our customers a way to use these resources in the most efficient way possible. And this just opens up one more door for them to do so.
Ah, okay. So previously, HCI Mesh was a sort of a one-to-one connection between two vSAN clusters, but now you're saying that within Update 2, we can have a actually borrow storage from clusters.
Well, we would within for vSAN 7 Update 1, HCI Mesh was really about the ability to borrow resources from one vSAN cluster over to another.
Yeah.
With vSAN 7 Update 2, it's all about the ability for traditional vSphere clusters to use storage from a vSAN cluster.
Ah, okay.
When putting kind of my architect hat on here, thinking about one of the challenges sometimes with HCI when you're trying to design or deploy it, is you'd run into this case of, okay, I've got a storage frame that's coming up on renewal. I need new storage, but I bought these blades, I don't know, 3 years ago, and I plan on running them another 2 years or something. You know, you get into a situation where you need to buy storage, but you don't necessarily need to buy a lot of computer. You maybe need some, but not a lot. This lets you kind of break up that purchasing cycle between storage and compute in some cases.
All right. Well, what about some of the, you know, because I know vSAN has a lot of value like deduplication and compression and things like that. So if we're talking about a a regular vSphere cluster attaching to vSAN, does it still get to take advantage of those things?
Yeah. And that's the, I think one of the interesting parts about all of this is that it's fairly transparent to the administrator in terms of what they need to do in order to mount that remote data store. But once they do, it's going to consume and provide the data services that are on that target vSAN cluster. And in fact, what we've done here with vSAN 7 Update 2 is update the storage policy-based management mechanism so that you can specify within a storage policy what kind of a data service that you want to be that you want the VMs using that storage policy to be associated with. So what will happen there is, for example, you can specify that perhaps you want the VMs using this given storage policy to be fully encrypted using data at rest encryption.
Yeah.
So then when a VM is provisioned at that time, it will then provide a filtered list of HCI data stores that are providing that data at rest encryption. Mm-hmm. So it makes it really easy for the administrator to be able to consume the resources in a way that you have multiple clusters offering these different kinds of data services.
So that's cool. I could basically say I want an all-flash cluster with encryption and compression only enabled, or kind of basically pick and choose which kind of cluster I want to land on.
Yep, exactly.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, it seems like that was a brand new feature in Update 1, and it's definitely gotten some legs on Update 2.
Yeah, I think this is a natural progression for where we originally were seeing what we could do with HCI Mesh. And, you know, we'll certainly be providing a lot of guidance around what would be some recommended practices around the design of an environment that you're going to use Mesh.
Yeah.
But the great thing about this feature so far is that even from the first iteration of it, it just works. It's so smooth and effortless. You know, we're using native vSAN protocols for all of the functionality and the efficiency. So, you know, we're not doing anything like NFS or iSCSI or anything like that. And that's really offered us the ability to extend the functionality of this in the way that we have.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, speaking of NFS, nice segue into file services, which does use NFS as well as SMB. And yeah, vSAN file services came out in vSAN 7, had some pretty cool updates in Update 1. And I hear there's some new updates in Update 2 as it pertains to file services.
Yeah, you know, I think when vSAN file services first came out, we heard a couple of follow-up questions as a result of that. At first, it was, hey, when are you going to support SMB?
Yeah.
And we, of course, addressed that in vSAN 7 Update 1. Then the next question was, well, when are you going to support a stretch cluster topology or a two-node topology?
Oh, yeah.
And well, the good news is in vSAN 7 Update 2, that's exactly what we're doing. We will be able to support both of those topologies when you are running vSAN file services. And we're also going to be supporting clusters that run file services that are also using the vSAN data in transit encryption. That's really important for many of these customers who want to make sure that data in flight is fully encrypted. And then, of course, a nice, interesting little feature as well is that we're going to be able to automatically reclaim some of the storage capacity that was used by a file share. For instance, if you had temporarily placed a lot of data out on a file share, removed it, we're going to be able to reclaim that data so that it can be consumed by other storage within that vSAN cluster.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. We've actually, John and I have already demonstrated this feature for some customers prior to launch. You know, this has definitely been a big request for some of our customers over in Europe, you know, that are familiar with using Stretch Cluster. And so, having the ability to do that with file services has been a high request, and we've been pretty busy showing it off lately.
Well, and as I'm sure, you know, many of our listeners know that, and just as well as you do, is that file services, there's a lot of nuances around that.
I mean,
there's a lot of companies who have focused decades on that effort. And what we're really striving to do is to make sure that we're hitting all of what is most important for many of our customers, and we're working down that list, so to speak. And we've also been able to look at opportunities to improve the performance around vSAN file services, in particularly the handling of smaller files. We've optimized the storage stack a bit to handle those smaller files much more efficiently. It's going to reduce CPU utilization and so forth.
So, Pete, I love that, you know, it's customer requests that are driving all these improvements in vSAN file services. You know, it's not just about shipping, hey, we got NFS, but we got SMB, we got extended attributes, we got all the little things that people are needing for use cases, you know, and seeing the Stretch clusters and seeing people use it for VDI profiles and other things we validated. But also, you know, it's we're also seeing another request that keeps coming in on vSAN is improvements on performance. And it seems like every release, there's always some type of performance improvement that sneaks out, you know, in one shape or another. Can you provide, I guess, some color on how did performance improve in this release?
Yeah. So, well, first, I think you noted something really important there in the fact that this seems to come up on each and every release. And that's we have to give credit where credit is due here.
Yeah.
We really try to take a very balanced approach at many of these releases where we want to touch on things like usability, and we want to touch on actual feature enhancements and functionality and as a performance. And if you take it at a very balanced approach, then you can really accomplish many of these, you know, the desired results that many customers want. So on the performance front, we have a couple of different things that we've been introducing here in vSAN 7 Update 2. One of them that I know is very close to your heart, of course, is the introduction of vSAN over RDMA. And of course, that RDMA is an ideal mechanism to be able to transport data in a highly efficient, fast manner. And when you have a full distributed storage system like vSAN, it makes a lot of sense for you to introduce something like RDMA as your interconnect to transmit a lot of this data in between the respective hosts. So that is what we're introducing in vSAN 7 Update 2. What the customers are going to see as a result of this really are reduced utilization of their CPUs within their hosts and the opportunity for improved performance of their workloads on certain workloads that they would have.
So that's, I'll say RDMA is something that I've been kind of tracking for quite a while, and it's been a steady progression. And I remember asking about it, you know, back in like the 5 or 6 days. And I think I remember Rakesh or Christian or someone looking at me like I was insane and being like,
yeah,
you know, we're still trying to get people to use 10 gig here. Like, you know, it's, you go back to the early days of HCI, but if you look at the CPU overhead for TCP, it's always been this kind of elephant in the room of, as we start scaling network interfaces, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna end up having to feed 8 cores to the NIC monster, you know, for TCP overhead. And some of that has been fought back. These newer NICs are better in terms of their offloads. you know, please buy the better NICs, guys. But also, you know, the improvements on multiple TCP session queues, it did help. We did push this back. But as we start seeing customers go to 25 and 100 gig, RDMA is just going to, and especially 100 gig, RDMA is starting to make sense from a, we're not having to waste too many cores on that. The latency improvements are certainly nice, you know, shedding that 80 microseconds or whatever of TCP latency can be really handy for those really demanding, you know, workloads or stuff like HANA, where you're trying to always stay under 1 millisecond. But the compute overhead reduction is quite nice.
John, would you say that 25 is the new 10?
25 is always the new 10 and 100 is the new 40. And if you've got 10 gig switches and you want to talk to me about performance problems, I don't want to talk to you. Let's get some 25 up in here. So,
but no, you know, the reduction of CPU utilization, that is not a trivial matter. When you think about, so think about this. So you introduce RDMA into your environment. And in a lot of cases, you could see up to about a 50% reduction in CPU utilization for the CPU cycles that were processing those TCP packets. Now, you combine that with using some of the newer storage devices, things that are NVMe, for example.
NVMe is a third the CPU interrupts of a SATA.
Exactly.
Device.
Yep. So now you've reduced the amount of CPU resources needed for your storage devices by down to one third of what it originally was. So you combine these efforts and you have this overarching sort of approach at dramatically reducing the effort that it takes to process IOs.
And to be clear, if you lower the CPU cost to a third of what it was, it doesn't mean you're going to get three times the IOPS. It means you're going to see a blended result of less CPU overhead, more for VMs, better latency, which really matters in some cases, and some better IOPS. You end up seeing kind of the results back from what I've seen anytime we try to slay the CPU monster on some type of process is it's actually kind of nice. You get kind of a blended approach back and where those benefits show up.
Yeah. And we know certainly too, that for many of our customers, the virtual resources that they're assigning for VMs have just naturally grown as well. So that sort of helps offset some of those needs. Now with, of course, with RDMA and what we are saying, the support of RDMA, we know that RDMA can be this overarching family of different protocols. And what we're actually referring to is the support of RDMA over converged Ethernet, or RoCE, and in specifically RoCE version 2 is what we're supporting in this release.
So Pete, if I'm trying to get some NICs that are RoCE v2 vSAN specifically ready, I know that we also support RDMA for virtual machines for other reasons, but if I'm looking to get take my next vSAN cluster to the max, where do I go to identify which NICs I should buy?
Yeah, we'll be offering some specific guidance in terms of what is going to be supported in terms of not only the adapters themselves, but recommendations around the supporting fabric that they're going to be using as well. So that's really, you know, stay tuned on that regard for some of the additional information around that.
This sounds like the answer is go read John's tech note he needs to go work on for core.vmware.com. So was it priority 3 and 4, data center bridging? Yeah, all those requirements. We'll get that mapped out. So.
Well, and I'm sure, though, that you'll mention in that tech note, one really interesting capability that vSAN over RDMA has in this is that there's quite a bit of intelligence built in to this mechanism in terms of the system being able to understand if it supports RDMA, and it's going to always prioritize the use of that for the vSAN hosts within that cluster. But if it can't for some reason, if there's some issue with one of the firmware on one of the adapters, or you know, there's some other issue, it's going to fall back to a traditional TCP over Ethernet. And this is all automatic.
When you act like there's an issue with hardware, no, it's going to be the networking guy Tim forgot to configure a port properly. Like we are missing an opportunity to blame the networking transport team here. Come on.
We'll make sure to add an alert for that.
Yell at Tim. He forgot to configure the VLAN.
Nice. Well, yeah.
Actually, I checked. There is a vSAN health alert, and it does a nice breakdown of why it's refusing to fire up RDMA on a given host. And it actually will show like what the priority was detected and is data center bridge configured. So yeah, go check the Skyline health alerts, and it will tell you that.
Nice. Well, yeah, I also heard there was some performance enhancements as it pertains to NUMA, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, we've made a lot of new enhancements around being able to accommodate the architecture that AMD uses for their EPYC series of processors. And what we've done is actually a series of advancements with regards to the core hypervisor and some of the changes in the optimizations within the scheduler to acknowledge how their architecture is a little bit different than Intel's, primarily around their NUMA design and their LLC design. And so we've been able to accommodate that part then, but then we've also been able to make some changes right within vSAN that helps all of those threads and the processes be more evenly distributed across those NUMA domains. And separate from any discussion about, you know, whatever given chipset that you're using within your host, we've also made some optimizations around our erasure coding scheme. And what's interesting about this is that we haven't actually changed the underlying data structure at all. What we've done is we've optimized how the incoming reads and writes are for that stripe with parity, so that we've been able to reduce the overall number of reads and writes when there is a brand new block being written with parity. And this is going to offer some pretty significant improvements, primarily around large sequential writes, which is certainly a challenge for any kind of storage system.
Yeah.
But what we're doing here is really giving the customers the ability to offer them to use a data placement scheme that it offers guaranteed space efficiency, but do so at a level of performance that may meet their needs.
So yeah, if you had some really heavy duty large block writes before, you know, you would often say this is a log volume or something, let's move this to RAID 1. This is an opportunity to kind of revisit that design decision. It sounds like there's some magic write coalescing or read write buffer optimization. There's always some interesting ways to try to cheat the parity gods and trying to avoid that amplification. So
yeah, and on this one, it's really just about how we do the calculation itself. If we're making decisions on whether or not a parity block is cached or if it is not, and you know, very conditional based off of the situation. But the end result is faster performance for when you're doing RAID 5 and RAID 6 erasure coding.
Awesome. Well, what about security? I know there's been some talk about some of the new enhancements in U2 as it pertains to security.
Yeah, there have been, Pete. You know, and this is sort of also the reminder of how many of our new features overlap somewhat with what you're hearing about what is new in vSphere. Yeah. And I think this next one is a great example of that, in that with vSAN 7 Update 2, we are supporting vSphere's new native key provider that is built right within vSphere. And this is going to allow you to really be able to provide that out-of-the-box experience and being able to secure a vSAN cluster using data at rest encryption without using an external KMS or an external KMS cluster. Now, nice. You can certainly use that if you want, and there's a lot of use cases for that because those are very robust and flexible solutions. But this is really offering our customers that scenario that they've been asking for, which is they have a very simple arrangement, a very small arrangement, but they want to be able to use encryption. And how do they do that? And that's what this is offering for us now.
So I feel like every time we talk about encryption, we need to talk about breakfast scrambles, you know, chicken and eggs. So where is this key provider living? What are we doing? You know, there's been this the first advice that comes out of, you know, everyone's mouth when you start talking about KMS design: do not put your key manager on top of the cluster that it's encrypting. Because then you have a very bad day when the power goes out, which apparently happens here in Texas on occasion. So what are we looking at to try to change, you know, are we going to try to finally decide which came first? What's going on there?
Yeah. So this is really sort of a combined effort. When you think about key management and what is occurring, you have responsibilities that live on the host, and you have responsibilities on the vCenter server. So the actual native key provider service itself is running on that vCenter server. And then you're going to have this interaction that would normally happen for a key distribution, where you would have the key encryption key be issued out to the respective hosts in the cluster. And then that negotiation complete. The DAC is then issued out to those respective hosts within the vSAN cluster, and then things are encrypted. So vCenter server is taking over some of those responsibilities that would normally be reserved for the external key management server that you would be running in some other cluster.
So it's kind of cool that, yeah, we're basically either able to proxy keys through the vCenter that's running the native key provider service, or have it just directly issue, depending on whether you want to still work with the external KMS or not. But the one thing that, reading through the docs on this and talking to Plinkers, who I'm sure will have a deep dive on this, that got me really excited was this construct of the ESXi key persistence and being able to cache basically a key locally. I mean, right now the keys are cached in memory. If you lose WAN connectivity or you lose network connectivity back to the KMS, your cluster doesn't just spontaneously explode.
Yeah.
But if you're ever in that scenario where, let's say you've got a remote site, you know, you lose the WAN and then you lose power and then you try to power back up, you couldn't recover. And so offering kind of a middle ground to where you can cache that either in the TPM devices or on the boot device can cover some of those use cases, particularly where before operationally you weren't deciding between, do I want, you know, a fully 100%, you know, the most locked down encryption and design ever, when reality your alternative was, okay, we either get encryption or we don't get encryption.
Yeah.
So having this kind of middle ground of, we can cache the keys persistently locally, this was something this got me thinking of, you know, this can handle those cases where customers, they wanted encryption, but they couldn't operationally deploy it, seemed to be what this kind of be addressing.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that really for us to keep in mind here when we're offering this feature like this is that there's going to be a number of factors that the customer is going to have to make a decision on of, you know, what is most important and what kinds of scenarios do they want to be able to address. And that's going to help them be able to answer the question of, should I and can I use the built-in native key provider functionality that is in vSphere 7 Update 2, or does it make most sense for them to use an existing external KMS or a new external KMS based purely off of what their requirements are for their organization?
Well, and I mean, this makes a lot of sense because if you already have existing KMSs, you're probably not going to burn them tomorrow. You're just going to use this to ease the deployment. But
yeah,
if you were looking at deploying a cluster in the back of a Humvee, you probably didn't want to put a pair of KMSs back there. So there's going to be some new topologies that are going to be pretty cool here.
Yeah. And I think on that note, though, what is really interesting and something that we hear about a lot, of course, is that these very same customers, they are wanting to encrypt their data. But they also want to make sure that that data is secured in another way. And they do that by making sure that that environment is fully isolated, meaning that they don't have any interaction with the internet in any sort of way.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we're very mindful of that, but at the same time, we've been offering a lot of capabilities that are courtesy of having that cloud connectivity.
Oh, yeah.
The health checks. Online health checks, yeah. And so forth. Mm-hmm. So with vSAN 7 Update 2, now we're introducing the capability of using what's referred to as the Skyline Health Diagnostics Tool,
yeah,
or SHD. And this is basically going to allow those isolated environments to take advantage of some of the, that cloud connectivity that they wouldn't see in a normally fully connected environment, but do so in a fully isolated environment.
Yeah, that's pretty good, because there are obviously a lot of environments that can take advantage of the Skyline Health by getting information and having some secure access to the internet. But then, of course, there are other environments where that is just a no-go. And it seems like in the past, the choice was, well, you just can't be up to date. You just can't get the latest, greatest. You just can't have all of the health checks. But I'm glad to see that this is finally reaching out to that whole portion of our customers that just can't be on the internet.
Yeah, this was a tool that was released earlier in 2020 just for a core vSphere. And it was so well received that I think we decided to make some additional investments here in making sure that it was capable and fully compatible with vSAN. And I think that flexibility there is key, because the customer is just going to download this tool and they're going to have it in a way that will allow them at a time and a frequency that they desire. They can update it with the latest signature files, run it within their environment so that then they can get the latest health checks and the KB references and every other element that they would get if that environment was fully connected.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a single package file basically you can get the updates, and they include the health updates also. You can also update the health asynchronously, but it's pretty nice. And this tool actually, if you're in an environment with intermittent internet, it can phone home and pull down updates too. So it can kind of operate in a completely disconnected or a partially disconnected world.
Nice, nice. Well, yeah, we talked about performance. We've talked about security. In my opinion, the third leg of this stool would probably be operations. And I know, you know, that's a huge value add for HCI customers. So why don't we spend the rest of our time talking about some of the enhancements with vSAN as it pertains to operations?
That sounds good. Yeah, I think first and foremost is extending some of the capabilities that we began to introduce in vSphere and vSAN 7.0, which was related to the vSphere Lifecycle Manager.
Yeah.
And of course, we extended the capabilities in vSAN 7 Update 1, and you're going to see that continue even further within vSAN 7 Update 2. In particular, we have a support for a new vendor plugin from our friends at Hitachi. And so some of their supported ReadyNode models will be able to take advantage of that very simple desired state model approach that VLCM uses.
Nice. So we've got HPE, we've got Dell, we've got Lenovo, and now we've also got Hitachi. Wow, the list is growing.
Yeah, I was talking to Dinesh, my friend over there, and he was talking about, you know, they've got the Hitachi Advanced Server, which is their ReadyNode, as well as also their hyperconverged systems, the UCPHC, which will do the VLCM. They also can patch switches. So it's kind of cool seeing the OEMs add their own different kind of flavor and spend to this stuff.
Yeah.
And from a usability standpoint, we made a nice little improvement within the UI, something based off of feedback that many of us had heard about, which was when you would have some sort of an update with the, let's say, an image depot, for example, that wouldn't be automatically visible within the vCenter UI. You would have to force it via a manual refresh. Mm-hmm. Now that's fully automatic, and you'll be able to see that just on an as-needed basis as it's updated. So just a nice little enhancement there as well.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I heard about VLCM, which I think is pretty awesome, is this concept of seeding. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, you bet. I think this is really focused on the ability to extend VLCM just based off of the lifecycle management of the existing hosts and help it during the process of spinning up new environments. And so now with vSAN 7 Update 2, we've been able to update some of the workflows in vSAN Easy Install, which is the workflow that allows you to bootstrap a VCSA on top of a single vSAN host. And then the cluster quick start, which is allow you to actually build out a cluster and expand it and extend it as needed. So both of these workflows now have VLCM incorporated in a way that allows you to build out either a desired image that can be used for that single vSAN host,
yeah,
or you can borrow and use a desired image from an existing vSAN cluster over to the brand new one that you're spinning up. So this is something that it just operationally can really help some of these greenfield deployments or near greenfield deployments as you're spinning out additional vSAN clusters.
Oh yeah. You don't have to build the whole image. I mean, you can literally just pull it from another, from another environment and be like, here's your desired image. And then you have consistency across all of your clusters, which I think is, you know, the goal ultimately of any lifecycle management tool.
Yeah. And this is really with help actually from the OEM vendors as well. We've been able to provide a framework for them to allow them to make sure that they have some of those resources on those hosts as they ship from the factory in the right place. So they might have the VLCM desired state specs. They may have the Image Depot contents or the VCSA installer or even their OEM hypervisor ISO on there. Having just a common method and where they can store that on the host so that in these greenfield deployments, you can spin up a new cluster in a really easy and efficient way is just going to be a win for everybody.
Oh yeah.
Pete, you're getting rid of my coffee pad time. Like the first time, whenever I was setting up an environment, it's like, okay, I'm going to go log in. I'm going to sit here and drink my coffee slowly in the morning and just download all of these things on every cluster setup when I go out to deploy a cluster for a customer. So now you're saying that if it's all inboxed, then that I'm going to have to get right back to actually getting real hard work done. So,
well, you just have to drink those Dr. Peppers because those will be ready.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Actually, what did I talk about? Coffee, the 23 delicious flavors. So, Pete, you'll get your check for that mention.
Nice. All right. Yeah, let's keep moving. There's a lot of other enhancements to operations. Let's talk some Quick Boot.
So Quick Boot's actually been around for a while. Everybody kind of forgets about it. But this is a cool capability that's often kind of tied to VUM or now VLCM to where it uses UEFI capabilities to basically skip on the boot cycle, the initialization of firmware and the BIOS run. And so if you think about when you start a server and you hear the fans bounce, yep, and then you see counting to the memory, 4 bazillion blocks, we're going to go check. And then it loads the NICs one by one by one. And you wonder, why did we put 8 NICs in this host? Because it's taking forever. Instead, it'll go right to the SXI initialization. And this is actually, you know, if you're patching clusters, and particularly with vSAN, where you're trying to reduce the amount of data you have to resync, this is a pretty handy feature. It has an HCL that has actually, it was real small initially, but it's expanded out quite a bit. You should turn it on. You should use it where you can. Note, it doesn't work if you're patching firmware or BIOS. You got to go all the way down. But if you're just doing security patches, pretty nice. You know, you're patching driver. You're just patching ESXi. You know, yeah. Pretty good. There's a new capability here. Called suspend a memory. There always was an option called suspend a disk, where basically you'd stun all the virtual machines and you would suspend their memory states to disk. So you didn't actually have to power off the VMs. You didn't have to evacuate them. So go into maintenance mode and have DRS get them off the host. It would basically suspend them and then they would come back running. Now, there'd be a couple minute gap there. They'd kind of be like, I'm a time traveling VM when they checked in NTP or AD, but you know, they'd come back. It was fine. What this suspended memory does is this allows you to basically suspend the memory state. And since we're not actually hard power cycling the host, just use a suspended state of memory for both vSphere and the virtual machines and not actually have to evacuate them. And this is about getting that couple minutes down to a couple seconds potentially. And so the implications on this is, you know, maybe you're not going to do this on, you know, the mother of all EMR databases, but you got a branch site that runs some file and print servers and some stuff. People aren't even in there.
Yeah.
And you want to patch it, but you don't really want to sit there and wait on vMotion to back and forth and evacuate those hosts. You can check this option, try this out. And when you're applying your latest ESXi security patches, patch that host and not have to actively wait on vMotion to do its thing back and forth. And particularly on environments where you've got some leeway on your maintenance windows, maybe it's a VDI environment, it's after hours or something, and you're like, you know, I'm okay with a couple second stun. You know, that's an acceptable tolerance in this environment. And maybe you've got a mandate from corporate. You're not like me where I just sit, patch, yell YOLO and wander off. But you, somebody actually says, you know, eyes on glass through the whole upgrade cycle. Yeah. Or maybe you've got like a remote site where you don't have that DRS light licensing. And so this gives you an option kind of as a middle ground to help you kind of barrel roll through those patch cycles a lot faster, and get that accomplished. So this is a peanut butter and jelly. So note, Quick Boot is one thing and suspend a memory, which is a new option,
yeah,
is a different thing, but peanut butter and jelly coming together, you can get through those cycles and you're not having to sit there and stare at the out of band and wait, or my favorite, sit there and stare at vCenter and like, host disconnected. Is it coming back? When will it come back? Like, please come back. And then how much memory do we have in this host? Did someone set perennial reservations for the RDMs? Oh God, this is going to take forever. Oh, there it is. Oh, thank God. You know, that whole like, a rapid mental journey that I just went through. You can just slam through it real quick.
So. You're triggering half of our audience right now.
Yeah. Plankers is probably hiding under a desk shaking. So no, it's fair.
Well, I think also too, one thing to keep in mind for this feature is that it's working within the context of VLCM. So this is for the process of host updates. And it's just not to say, oh, I want to enable quick boot and this is going to make any and every reboot faster.
Sure.
That's not the goal of this. And of course, it's sort of, we're viewing it at a cluster level and it's enabled at a cluster level as well.
No, this is lifecycle management because, I mean, there are a lot of environments that have a lot of servers that need to go through this process and, you know, just rebooting every single server, there's a lot of things to consider, right? What is the availability, based on my vSAN storage policy based management? You know, there are so many factors to consider. And so the quicker those hosts get back up and running, the better everybody is.
Well, and I've seen some people when, you ask Pete or myself, they'll be like, how big is too big of a cluster? And I go into my Jurassic Park lunch speech and their eyes glaze over. But the reality is sometimes, you've got an environment where if you're for your monthly patch cycle, not maybe your quarterly BIOS or other thing, you don't want to have to sit there for, you've got an eyes on glass requirement. You don't have to sit there for 3 hours as it slams through this giant, 64 whatever plus node cluster. And so being able to reduce that operational time means potentially you can hit your patch window requirements. Maybe your windows are unnecessarily tight for reasons, of politics you can't deal with. But also this just lets you get back to work and get other things done. So,
and that's what it's all about.
I like it.
Okay, Pete. So I'm in a time machine, this week I've been working on, and I'm hearing about proactive HA. I'm like, wait a minute. I've heard about proactive HA. Why? What's going on with that?
Yeah, well, thanks to vSAN 7 update 2, we are supporting now vSphere Proactive HA. And of course, this, this may be familiar to some, but is something that for our vSAN customers, they haven't been able to run in terms of it wasn't a fully integrated solution. And so by that, what I mean is that when you have a vSphere Proactive HA enabled, this is a mechanism that allows the hypervisor to detect if there is an impending failure on the host. And it does this through a vendor plugin. And so from there, that would proactively migrate those VMs off of that given host. Well, for vSAN, though, we would still have data on that host. And with vSAN 7 update 2, we have updated a proactive HA so that not only do the VMs get evacuated, but so does the data. So it's this very coordinated effort to fully evacuate both of those. And what that allows us to do is not only increase the uptime of these applications, but also maintain the level of a prescribed resilience that was assigned to it by the respective storage policy.
Nice. Yeah, that is cool. All right. Well, listen, we're running low on time, Pete. So I want to speed up to, we're still in operations, but I want to talk a little bit about monitoring. I know, there's been enhancements. The last, I'd say 3 or 4 releases of vSAN have really put an emphasis on increasing the options for monitoring. So tell me what's new with you two.
Yeah, we've introduced an assortment of new enhancements with regards to monitoring. I'm just going to touch on a couple of the ones that I'm most excited about. One of them is being able to provide a visible history of the respective health checks within vCenter.
Yeah.
And so now you can look at Skyline Health and quickly enable a view health history toggle. And that's going to give you a context for when these alarms or when these health checks went into some sort of a warning state or a full error state. And the biggest benefit around this is that it gives a context to understanding when these things occurred and why. Sometimes these alerts are somewhat ephemeral and they disappear as soon as they appear. And that's very frustrating.
Why was the slow yesterday? Why was the slow yesterday?
Exactly.
That's like having a security camera that only has a live feed. That doesn't really help you. I want to hear what would happen when I got robbed. What happened when somebody broke in? Yeah.
So this is really hits on that area in particular, and something I think is just when it comes down to the day-to-day operations is so very important for our customers.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We also have the ability to now list things out within the vCenter UI for the respective VMs that you're running that are powered by vSAN. So you can do all kinds of sorting and understand what the top contributors are. That's sometimes the biggest ask that an administrator has for themselves in trying to understand what's hogging the most resources in my cluster. This is a really easy way now for you to do it. And you can sort it by VMs or by the disk groups in their utilization as well. So it's a nice, interesting little feature.
Yeah, I thought that was cool in U1 where we were able to select a subset of VMs to monitor. But I think this takes it a step further because it says you don't even have to know which VMs. We're going to let you know. These are the top contributors, and then you can monitor those. That takes it to the next level, I think.
Yeah, those two features actually work really well together because it would sort of work into that you walking down that path of trying to figure out what's going on,
sure,
who's using all those resources. So yeah, great point.
I like it. Well, man, yeah, we're running low on time, but there are a lot of updates with update 2. It seems like these dot releases are bigger than the main releases these days, and that's a good thing, I guess. We are going to leave links to many blog posts and videos and all kinds of goodness as it pertains to vSAN 7 update 2 on the show notes of this page. But John, closing thoughts before we let Pete go?
I've had too much caffeine, Pete.
Okay.
I'm going to have to make some herbal tea and calm it.
Nice.
Down. Recenter myself.
You do that, John. And while you're sipping your herbal tea and then chasing it with a Dr. Pepper, I'm going to ask Pete Keeler real quickly. What are your closing thoughts on vSAN 7 update 2?
It only helps if you update your cluster.
Boom.
So that's what it's all about.
I like it. I like it. Well said. Well said. Pete, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Pete and John.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Mr. Pete Keeler for joining us today and talking about vSAN 7 Update 2. We're back next time. But until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.